concerned about, considering the big picture of everything else the site was doing. And then he decided that yes, it absolutely was. Because this, unlike every other terrible thing he'd caused in the world, was something he could fix. "Off the record," he said. "It has to be. And you'll understand why as soon as I tell you." Lee nodded, making a zipping gesture across her lips. "I told the president that he was going to be diagnosed with stage 4 lymphatic cancer in January of next year. And then I said that I'd set up all my predictions to be released on the site, including that one, unless I tell the system once per day to hold them back." Lee whistled.
"Jesus, is that true? Is he going to die?"
"I don't know if he'll die, just that he'll get diagnosed."
"What did he say?"
"Nothing at first. I mean, what do you say to that?" His face went really still. You could see him thinking it through. If the country finds out about the cancer thing, then no second term. No one will vote for a terminal president. Will shrugged. "I told Green to let us go, and gave him my word that I wouldn't let that particular prediction leak before voting day. But if he comes anywhere near us, out it will go."
"That's why you said we're safe for the next 6 months," Lee said.
"Until the first Tuesday in November," Will said. "Election day. Hopefully longer, though. We knew something like this might happen eventually. We made plans." Will took a small hard drive that held demos of most of his original songs and stuffed it into the bulging duffel. He looked at the basses and other instruments leaning against the walls. Some in cases, some not. Some of them he'd had for 10 years or more. There was just no way. Will zipped his bag closed. He stepped over to Lee and looked her in the eye. "For all I know, you're taping this. Maybe you've got me on video. I don't know. I don't really know you. Homs is pissed at me for bringing you here."
"I noticed," Lee said. "Why did you?"
"I'm guilty about a lot of things. I didn't want stiffing you on your interview to be one more."
Lee raised an eyebrow. "Will, honestly, that's stupid."
"Guilty of that too," he said. Lee was blocking the way out of the bedroom, standing with her arms at her sides, looking at him. "Can I get past?" Will said.
"I'm still going to write a story," she said. "I'll do my best to make your quotes from the hotel interview accurate. It'll be from memory, but I think I've got it. Hell, I've got material from 3 Oracle interviews, including today. If I can't put a story together by this point, I should quit."
3, Will thought. He gazed at Lee for a long moment. She met his eyes without blinking. "I didn't think you remembered," Will said.
"Union Square," Lee answered. "I recognized you right away when I saw you on the helicopter without the wig. Is that why you chose me? I've got to say, Will, I still don't get it."
Will felt his face flush. I used to read all the articles that came out about the Oracle," he said. "Everyone speculating about who I was, if the whole thing was real. I stopped after everything started to get so dark. But back then, you wrote an article about me. It was different from the others. It talked about me like I was a person. Tried to get into what I was thinking and feeling. Maybe how hard it would be to have to deal with all this."
He shrugged.
"I never forgot it. It's why I talked to you in Union Square. I recognized your name." They stared at each other for a long moment.
"I knew that piece was good," Lee said. "It almost got me fired. But I knew it was good."
"Yeah," Will said. He turned and yelled into the living room. "Hamza, how we doing?"
"Getting there,"
Hamza called back.
"You could have organized your files a little better, you know. You've got stuff all over the place here. I just want to make sure I get everything we need."
Will looked back at Lee, who was just watching him, waiting. "Before I forget," he said, "you'll need that prediction, so that people believe you interviewed me.
I'll put something up on the site about you too, like I said I would.
Thank you, Will. That will make my life a lot easier.
Okay. Can you write this down? Lee reached into the pocket of her hoodie and produced a small notepad and a pen. Will thought through the ever-shrinking set of predictions he hadn't yet put out into the world in one way or another. It didn't take long. He only had 3 left, and 2, the ever-confounding 23-12-4, and a vague phrase about a laundromat, weren't anything Lee would be able to use. The 3rd, though, it was perfect. Will found that he wasn't even all that surprised. The site had given him exactly what he'd need for every step along the way. No, not what he would need. What it would need. The devil's toolbox, almost all of which had been used. But not all. At this moment, when he needed a prediction, he had exactly 1 left that would suit the purpose. Of course. In about 2 weeks, on the 5th of July, a guy named Manuel Escobar will hook a 212-pound tarpon while fishing off Santa Monica. It will happen at about 3:30 in the afternoon. He watched Lee write that down, imagining the sight grinning fiendishly as he let another chunk of it loose. Lee gave him a doubtful look. President's getting cancer and Manny Escobar catching a fish. Whoever sent you this stuff? They've got a weird sense of what's important. It's all important, Lee, Will said. If I didn't get the Escobar prediction, which didn't seem important enough to put up on the site, I might not have had anything left for you to prove you met me. Lee shivered involuntarily. What does that mean, Will? She asked. If you figure it out, let me know. I stopped thinking about it a long time ago, he lied.
There was something else, Lee said, back at the Waldorf. You were about to tell me something important that you thought the world needed to know.
Will looked at her for a long moment.
I'm not sure what you mean, he said.
Will hoisted his bag over his shoulder and stepped past Lee into the living room.
Miko, can you come in here for a second? I want to talk to you and Hamza.
Miko stepped out of the bathroom, wiping her hands on her pants. Hamza looked up from the computer, his face frustrated.
Come on, Will. We need to get this done and get the hell out of here. This is the one place people can connect to you. If we didn't have so much Oracle-related stuff here, I'd never have let you come back to your apartment. We need to get it cleaned and get gone.
The safe house will be nice, Miko said. Almost a vacation. New York sucks in the summer anyway.
No, Will said.
Hamza gave Will a questioning look.
Are you thinking the Republic? He asked.
No, Will repeated. I'll go to the safe house, but you two need to take your stuff and go someplace else. Someplace I don't know about.
Set up a new life for yourselves. Have your baby. Forget you ever knew me.
Hamza and Miko turned to look at each other. They were silent for a moment, then looked back at Will.
Are you sure? Hamza said.
Yes, go.
It's all right. I'll figure the rest of this out on my own.
Oh, Will,
Miko said.
It's all right, Will repeated. I'll be fine.
Miko reached out and took Will's hand. After a pause, Hamza did the same. Will held his friend's hands for a long moment. Lee watched, quiet.
Thank you, Miko said.
We'll all be back together before you know it, Hamza said. My kid needs a godfather, once this is all over.
Will released their hands. Once this was over, he couldn't even picture it. Will's cell phone rang. He reached for it without thinking and checked the caller ID. It's my mom, he said.
You aren't home, Hamza said. No time.
Miko snatched the phone from Will's hand. She gave him a disapproving look.
You're about to vanish for God knows how long, she said. Don't be a dick.
She answered the phone.
Mrs. Dando, hello, she said. It's Miko Shake. We haven't spoken in ages. How are you?
Mom, Will thought.
He hadn't spoken to her in... what? He'd called once or twice since the Oracle dream, but the conversations had always been short. 2 months ago, he thought? 3? Miko wasn't talking. Whatever Will's mother was saying, she didn't like it. A deep frown cut across her face. Will raised an eyebrow. What? He mouthed at Miko.
Yes, he's right here, Miko said.
She held out the phone. Will didn't want to talk to his mother anymore. This felt like a bad news call, a someone just died call. But he took the phone. Miko turned to Hamza and pointed at the computer.
Finish now, she said, her voice ice cold.
Hi, Mom, Will said, hearing Hamza begin a burst of intense typing.
Is it true?
His mother asked him.
Are you the Oracle?
Will's veins turned to glass.
It's on CNN, Will. Is it true?
Will could hear fear in his mother's voice. For me? Or of me, he thought. He held the phone away from his mouth. Miko, turn on CNN quick. Miko nodded. She picked up the remote from Will's coffee table and turned on Will's 55-inch television. Far too big for his apartment. One of the things he'd bought for himself in the early days of the Oracle windfall. An anchor was speaking, over a news ticker running across the bottom of the screen. Breaking news. Presidential spiritual advisor Reverend Hosiah Branson identifies the Oracle. Footage appeared in a window over the anchor's shoulder, of Hosiah Branson standing in some sort of television studio, in front of an easel that held a blown-up photograph that Will recognized. The glass in Will's veins shattered. He used one picture for everything. Facebook, Twitter, dating sites. Always the same image. The one time he thought he'd been photographed decently well, at a gig a few years back. His hair was a bit long and he was smiling, and it looked like he thought he should look. And there it was, on CNN. According to Branson, the Oracle is a New York City resident named Will Dando, the newscaster was saying. Will's mother spoke in his ear, but he couldn't hear her. Reverend Branson issued his announcement, which included descriptions of an Indian or Arab man, an Asian woman, and a dark-skinned woman with dark hair and eyes that he claims are associates of the Oracle. Beyond that, we're waiting for developments. I have one of CNN's legal advisors here with us this morning, Sarah DeCourt. After the break, we'll get her opinion on whether Reverend Branson is opening himself up to liability by essentially having outed the Oracle.
That motherfucker! Will screamed at the television.
Will!
His mother said in her ear, shocked.
Listen, Mom. I'll be fine. Don't worry about me. You need to take care of yourself, you and Dad. It won't take them long to track you down. I'm going to send you money, to you and everyone else in the family. A lot of money. Take it and disappear for a while. And tell Emily to do it too. Go overseas if you can. I'll get back in touch soon, I promise.
Oh, Will. Oh, my God,
his mother said, almost sighing into the phone.
Why didn't you tell me?
She sounded stunned, hurt. I didn't want you to worry. And I didn't want to have to deal with questions that I don't know the answers to. I'm sorry, Mom.
Oh, Will,
she said. Her voice seemed stronger.
I don't understand how this all happened, but I'm so proud of you. The people you saved with your predictions. You're doing something good, Will. Something amazing.
Will closed his eyes. Thank you, Mom, he said. But I have to go now. I love you, and I'll see you as soon as I can. His mother was crying.
I love you too, Will. Please be safe.
Will screwed his eyes even more tightly shut. He ended the call. His phone immediately started to ring again. Hamza's phone lit up, and a second later, Miko's. Hamza stood up quickly, pulling his phone from his pocket and holding out his hand.
Phones, quick! They can track us through them even if we turn them off!
Hamza took all three phones and disappeared into the bathroom.
A small sound a moment later. A splash. God, Will said. He felt an arm around his shoulders. He opened his eyes. It was Lee.
I'm sorry, Will, she said.
It's okay, he said, pulling himself together. It's time to go. Hamza emerged from the bathroom, empty-handed. He looked at the monitor on Will's desk. He hesitated, then stepped quickly over to it and started typing.
Leave it, Will shouted. Will, I have to finish this. If I don't do it right, information can still be pulled off it. They'll figure out how to find us, find the cabin, the Republic, the money.
Hamza, Will cried in frustration.
They're probably downstairs right now. We've got to go. You guys can come on the plane with me. We'll separate once we're away. Listen, you take Miko and go, Hamza said. I'll be right behind you. It's a charter. It's not like we'll miss the plane. But this has to be done, or there's no point in going at all.
I'll wait with Hamza, Miko said immediately.
Don't be silly, Meeks. Just go,
Hamza said, frantically trying to finish wiping Will's computer clean.
I'll stay, she said in a quiet but very firm voice.
Damn it, Will said. Let me do it at least. Hamza spared Will a half-second glance.
You're terrible with computers. It'd take you 15 minutes. It'll take me 3.
There's no question. I'm not the Oracle, you are. Go, Will.
Will hesitated for another moment.
All right. Get out as quickly as you can.
He looked at Lee.
Come on, he said. Let's go. I've got a car waiting downstairs. I'll drop you on the way.
Will picked up his duffel that held his clothes and ran toward the door. He grabbed a baseball cap and a pair of sunglasses from the small table to the left of the door and put them on. Poor excuse for a disguise, but it was all he had. He looked back at Hamza, Miko standing next to him with her arms crossed across her chest. Hamza was intent on the screen, his hands moving quickly. Miko's face was heartbreaking, beautiful and pale.
Hurry, Will said.
Sure, man, Hamza said, not looking up.
5 minutes behind you, tops. Get going.
Lee was already in the hall. She'd picked up Will's shoulder bag and stood at the top of the stairs. She looked scared but exhilarated.
Every time I see you is chaos, she said.
Try living it, Will said.
He took his duffel and followed Lee down the 6 flights of stairs. 2 Lincoln Town cars sat idling at the curb just outside his building. Will ran to the closer one and knocked on the driver's window.
Trunk, he said.
The driver, a dark-skinned man with the look of Central Africa, nodded amiably. Will ran to the back of the car and threw in his bag. Lee pulled open the passenger door and tossed the shoulder bag into the back seat. She looked up the street. Her whole body tensed.
Will, she said. Look.
Will looked. Advancing in their direction along the sidewalk, still a block and a half away, was a group of about 20 people, men and women of different ages and races, unified only by a similar look of purpose. The one in the lead, a tough-looking man with graying hair and a long coat, held his phone in his hand and kept looking from it to the address of each building they passed.
Get in the car, Lee, Will said, slamming the trunk closed. We have to go.
She got into the town car and scooted across the seat to the far side. Will piled into the car after her, hoping that the driver hadn't been listening to the news while he was waiting.
McAllen Airfield? The driver asked,
consulting a clipboard on the seat next to him.
That's right, but we'll make a stop on the way. Just drive, okay? Just get us rolling.
Of course, sir, the driver said.
The car pulled away and drove to the corner, where it stopped for a red light. Will and Lee rotated in their seats to look back at the entrance to Will's building. The group had reached it, and stood in a loose cluster around the door, in the midst of a heated discussion. Will imagined they were trying to decide whether to buzz up or just smash through the doors. And then Hamza's head appeared from the alley next to the building, peering out cautiously at the people waiting on Will's stoop. He'd left the building through the side door from the basement laundry room. Brilliant.
Hamza turned to speak to someone behind him. Miko had to be. The two of them emerged from the alley, each holding their own duffel bag, ignoring the second town car idling at the curb, trying to make it to the corner without being seen. Lee reached out and took Will's hand in an iron grip. Will barely noticed. He couldn't take his eyes off his friends. "Please," he said out loud. Will heard shouting. He shifted his gaze back to the crowd around the building's front door. They had noticed the two figures trying to slip away, and were running down the sidewalk toward Hamza and Miko.
"No,"
Lee said. The traffic light turned green. Will's town car pulled through the intersection and continued up the street. Will watched, helpless, as Hamza and Miko ran. They held onto their bags for a few crucial seconds longer than they should have, and Miko fell behind. They dropped their luggage to the sidewalk and sprinted, but the crowd caught Miko. Someone shoved her to the ground from behind, and she went sprawling. Lee gasped. Will saw Miko's face bounce against the pavement. Hamza turned and ran back to help her, and in moments the mob had surrounded them both. Will heard himself repeat, "No, no, no," over and over again as he watched someone's shoe plant into Hamza's midsection, someone twisting Miko's tiny, thin arm. It was like a slideshow, single frames of violence as the thicket of the mob's individual parts shifted every few seconds to allow another glimpse.
"Stop the car," Will shouted.
He reached over and yanked on the door handle, but the driver had locked the doors when they started to move. Lee wrapped both arms around Will and held him as tightly as she could. Will fought her.
"Let me go. They're dying," he cried. "Will, no. There are too many of them. You can't go back. They'll just get you too. We have to go."
"No, you don't understand. Nothing will happen to me. The site wants me alive."
"Sir?" the driver asked from the front seat. "Is everything all right?"
The car had slowed. Will fought free of Lee's arms and gave the door handle a savage yank. He spilled out to the street, sprawling on his hands and knees. He pushed himself to his feet. Now that he was out of the car, he could hear the roars of the crowd, shouts about the Oracle and God and the devil. Will's mind went white with fury.
"Will!"
Lee yelled behind him, from inside the car. Will ran back down the sidewalk, toward the group surrounding Hamza and Miko. The second town car was still idling on the curb. Through the windshield, Will could see the driver talking excitedly on his cell phone while watching the crowd. With two great steps, Will leapt onto the hood of the town car. The driver stared at him in shock.
"Call the police," Will yelled at the driver. "Now!"
Without waiting for an answer, Will took another step onto the car's roof. He looked down into the crowd. He could see his friends. Miko was curled into a tight ball, and Hamza's arms were around his wife, trying to shield her.
"Stop!" Will shouted. "I'm here!"
The men at the edge of the crowd heard him and looked. Eyes widened, and a moment later, almost as one, the rest of them turned to see him. He could hear Miko sobbing.
"You know who I am," Will said. "What I can do. Get the fuck out of my way."
Will jumped down from the roof of the car. He stared into the face of the first person he saw, an older man, grizzled with stubble. The man stumbled back, and Will stepped forward. And so it continued through to the center of the mob, people parting to let him through, Will staring through anyone who met his eyes until they looked away. He bent down over Hamza and Miko. Hamza's eyes were closed, his face bruised and swollen. Blood leaked from his nose and mouth, giving a thin, dark shine to the lower half of his face. Miko looked up, saw him. She looked better than Hamza, but only just.
"Will,"
she managed, barely.
"Come on," Will said. "We have to go now. Can you get up?"
"I don't know. I'll try. Hamza..."
I'll help him. He slowly helped Miko to her feet. She cradled her belly protectively with one arm, and with the other she held out an arm to help Will pull Hamza up. Hamza stirred briefly as he was lifted, but didn't open his eyes. Will put Hamza's arm across his shoulder and looked up, half expecting the crowd to have surrounded them again. They hadn't. The path was clear, and the people who had just moments ago been screaming with exultation as they beat two people to death now just watched in eerie silence. Will hobbled with Hamza and Miko to the street, grabbing their dropped bags on the way. The second town car was still at the curb. Miko opened the back door, and Will pushed Hamza into the car. Hamza had come around enough to help. He dragged himself to the other side of the car to make room for Miko. Miko suddenly let out a cry of pain and clutched her stomach. She wobbled, almost going to her knees.
"Oh, no,"
she gasped.
"No, please."
"Here," Will said. He got Miko into the back seat as carefully as he could. Her breathing was rapid, and tears coursed down her face.
"Get them to the goddamn hospital,"
Will shouted at the driver, who nodded, his eyes wide.
"Will,"
Hamza managed,
"get out of here."
"I can't leave you two."
"Yes, you can. You have to. It's safer. Just go."
Will looked into his friend's face, realizing that safe in this context meant as far away from the Oracle as possible, and understanding and agreeing. He stepped back and closed the car door. The town car peeled out from the curb. Will turned back to face the crowd. In the distance, he could hear sirens approaching, and apparently so could they. People were glancing at one another, awakening to what they'd just done, drifting away down the sidewalk in small, shamed groups.
"How dare you," Will said.
He looked from face to face. Not one of them would look him in the eye.
"What are you people?"
"God is with us," a man with long gray hair said. "That's all you need to know, monster."
If Will had been holding a gun, he would have shot the man dead. As it was, he used the weapon he had.
"I am," he said. "I am a monster. You're all going to die. Horribly and in pain. Every single one of you. You're dead. Trust the monster. The Oracle never lies."
The crowd recoiled, shock on every face. Will turned and walked away, toward the first car. He could see Lee waiting for him. Behind him, shouts of confusion and apology spiraled up from the crowd. Will didn't look back. Chapter 35. The town car moved north along 9th Avenue, inching its way through heavy traffic on its way to the George Washington Bridge. The Oracle was hunched down in his seat, his arms clenched around his torso, sunglasses on and a baseball cap pulled down low over his face. He presented like a pill bug curled up into an armored ball after being poked. Lee wanted to talk to him, but the man in the front seat was a problem. Every driver in New York City understood the beautiful illusion of privacy offered by the back seat of their ride, be it a cab, limo, or Uber. That sacred trick of solitude. But this particular driver currently had the Oracle as his passenger, and the minute he learned that, all chauffeurly codes of honor were likely to fly out the window. So Lee sat quietly, thinking about how much danger they might be in, attempting to calculate her personal threat level versus the Oracle's. She wondered where they were headed at that moment, and whether Hamza and Miko were all right, and what could possibly happen next, taking thorough mental notes toward the moment when she might be able to write it all down. Will unclenched, sitting upright in a quick, convulsive movement. He looked around the back seat, his hands casting across the leather, until they found his shoulder bag, forgotten since they had first entered the car. He ripped it open, fumbling inside until he pulled out a cell phone. He swiped it on, cursed, then flipped it over.
What is it?
Lee asked.
What's the matter?
Will didn't answer. He popped open a small compartment on the back of the phone and levered out a small chip of plastic, the SIM card, Lee realized. He pressed the control to pull down the car's window and tossed the SIM card out onto 9th. Then he removed the phone's battery, and a block or two farther north, threw that out too. The last item to go was the phone itself. Lee noticed the driver was watching the Oracle through the rearview mirror, but he didn't say anything. The holy veil was holding, at least for the moment. She understood what Will had done. Hamza had done the same thing back in the apartment. Phones could be tracked easily, and the device Will had gotten rid of probably had some connection back to his actual name. She thought about news offices all over the world, and trending topics and hacker collectives, all finally with something to work with. Two words. Will Dando. Lee tried to imagine it. Tried to put herself into Will's shoes. She couldn't. Privacy, even the illusion of privacy, was too central to how she viewed herself. The ability to decide what parts of you were shared with the world seemed like it should be a basic human right, no longer an option for Will Dando. Everything he'd ever done, or thought, or bought, everyone he'd ever slept with, every choice he'd ever made, within a day, all that would be public knowledge. Will reached back into his bag and pulled out a second cell phone. It looked cheaper than the one he had destroyed, less sleek, maybe a prepaid burner. He powered it on and thumb-typed for a moment, then showed the screen to Lee. Will, let's talk this way. She reached into her own pocket and removed her cell, opening a similar program and typing for a moment. Lee,
I get it. Where are we going?
Will. Private airport just outside city. Charter jet was supposed to take me, H, M, to a safe house. Can't go now.
Lee. Why?
Will. Paid for plane with Oracle accounts. Don't know if bad guys made connection. Can't take chance. Lee thought about this for a little while before responding. Lee.
Chance of what? Everyone already knows you're the Oracle. Why worried now?
Will read her screen, then looked at her, frowning. He typed for a moment, then held up his phone for her to read. Will. Best friends just almost got killed. Maybe just beginning. You forget? Lee recoiled from herself. Of course she hadn't forgotten. The sight of Miko's face hitting the sidewalk would be embedded in her soul forever like a tick. But she had just meant. It didn't matter. Lee.
No, didn't forget. I'm sorry. What now?
Will. Still need to go to safe house. H set it up so it wasn't connected. Off-grid, bought with cash, private. Can finish this there.
Lee. Finish what?
Will hesitated. Will. Long story. Have to stay hidden until it's done. If world knows where I am, no peace. Too many questions. Lee nodded.
Lee. Okay. But if you can't fly, how?
Will looked at the driver, who was ignoring them, concentrating on navigating the slow-moving traffic approaching the bridge across the Hudson. He bent to his phone and went through a long burst of typing.
Will.
Need to buy this car. 20,000 in bag and trunk. Emergency cash. Can offer to driver. Lee responded.
Lee. He might not own the car. Sometimes they're just hired by the company.
Will. We'll figure it out. Will you help me? Lee stared at the phone, focused on the last four words, seeing all the opportunity and hazard they offered, trying to understand the magnitude of the situation she had fallen into. She looked up at the Oracle. No, at Will Dando, trying to see him as a person, trying to decide whether she should leap from the car and sprint down the side of the road. An hour later,
a strange negotiation with their wary, confused driver was concluded. The Oracle was almost $19,000 poorer, and Lee sat behind the wheel of their new car, driving at a decent clip over the George Washington Bridge. A sign welcoming them to New Jersey flashed by overhead, momentarily illuminated in their headlights.
"We're almost over the bridge," Lee said. "Then what?"
"West," the Oracle answered, his eyes on the road ahead. "Then up." Part 4. Summer. Chapter 36. "This is almost over," Will thought. He had started with 108 predictions. All but two had been released into the world in one way or another, posted on the site, sold, used to prove his bona fides, used to escape from the goddamn president of the United States. And now just two. One was the numbers, the final prediction, still incomprehensible. The other was just nonsense, a short phrase including so few details that it was impossible to understand or use. It was set to occur later that day, though, so Will assumed he'd find out what it meant eventually. The site would probably use it to do something dire. Make Hoover Dam collapse, maybe. Will glanced out the window, watching as northern Ohio streamed steadily past, a nondescript set of flatlands interspersed with toll plazas and interchangeable towns. I-80 was a hell of a road. It would get them halfway to their destination, but not much for scenery. Everything seemed calm, ordinary, relaxed. That was not, in fact, the case. It wasn't just that almost all the predictions had been used. Things were accelerating. In just the past few days, he'd been abducted by agents of the president, the world had learned the Oracle's identity, he and his best friends had been attacked, and he'd run from his city like a rat scuttling down subway tracks ahead of an oncoming train. It felt like a moment from his childhood, when he was 8 or 9. He'd been riding his bike in the neighborhood and had found himself at the top of a hill. He was new to bikes at that point. His father had only taught him how to ride a month or so before. He pushed off, his speed almost instantly increasing beyond the point where his legs could keep up with the pedals, seeing traffic in the cross street at the bottom of the hill, and realizing that there was absolutely nothing he could do to avoid it other than ditching the bike, but being more afraid of the pavement than the cars, breathlessly waiting to see which catastrophe would end him. That was this. The sight was the bicycle, and Will was riding it right into traffic. But not just Will. Everyone. The entire world. He looked down at the newspaper in his lap, frowning. The front page, every front page, was using the same photograph CNN had run in its original broadcast outing the Oracle's identity. Will Dando, sitting on the edge of a bandstand at a club, bass on his lap, tuning up before a show. He remembered the gig, a quick one-off in support of a hedge fund guy who could afford to hire a great support band to play under his crappy Dave Matthews-y originals. He'd had a photographer at the show, like it was some epic showcase for the ages instead of a 9 p.m. Thursday slot at the Mercury Lounge. The pics went up on the singer's website a few days later. One shot had caught Will's eye, so he'd copied it and used it as his profile picture on a dating website, or three, a few years back. Not unsuccessfully, either. Now it was in the corner of every screen, on every landing page, above the fold of every paper. And Will hated it with everything he had. He skipped past the first three articles, all Oracle-related, delving deep into his past, already featuring quotes from people his life had touched in one way or another. He skipped it all. He needed to function, and sinking into the ongoing dissection of his existence would paralyze him, if he let it. Every story not about the Oracle described a planet in revolt. Economic turmoil, significant military actions on four continents, cleanup of U.S. operations in Niger, saber-rattling by a warlord in a tiny nation in Central Asia who had gathered an army and besieged a city, unrest in France, many other battles large and small, coups, plunging markets, fear. Behind it all, the sight. Will's mouth twisted in frustration. He folded the paper and tossed it behind him, where a small but growing pile of other publications covered the back seat and spilled onto the floor. He opened a notebook on his lap and reached for a set of colored pencils in the passenger door's storage bay, purchased the night before along with the papers and magazines now avalanching across the back seat at a travel plaza off the New Jersey Turnpike. He flipped through the book and started to jot down notes from the morning's reading. Page after page was already covered by scribbled notations in various colors. Will's attempt to analyze the site's plan, to understand what it had done, and what it was attempting to do. The original Oracle predictions, all 108, were written on the first several pages in black, and the fact that he had done this twice in two separate notebooks did not escape his notice. He'd burned the predictions. They still came true. Events listed in green represented confirmed after-effects of an Oracle prediction being put into the world, either by selling it or putting it on the site. Ripples. Anything in blue was unconfirmed, but likely, a maybe. Red events were dead ends, things that had originally looked connected but had ceased interacting with the rest of the site's web. Will included them because it was always possible that he just hadn't seen the full set of connections yet, or that the site would loop back and reconnect with them down the road. Finally, purple for the big stuff. When green events mesh together to do something else, to move toward a larger purpose. As far as Will could tell, that larger purpose was represented largely by the litany of woes he had just read in the paper. They'd only been on the road for 2 days, but dear God, Will missed the internet. Staying updated on the site's activities using only hard copy was maddening. He had a few prepaid phones he could use to get online if he had to, but he was saving them for emergencies, and checking CNN.com didn't count. Will had tried listening to radio news as he and Lee drove west, to stay updated in something closer to real time. But even a few hours of that had been too much. Too many breathless DJs and talk shows and morning zoos enjoying their deep dive into the life of Will Dando. Will finished making notes on the morning's reading and closed the notebook, setting it and the pencils on the dashboard. He looked at Lee, sitting behind the steering wheel with her hands sensibly at 10 and 2. He wanted to talk through his theories, explain what the site was doing. But the truth was that he didn't know this woman at all. They'd managed some small talk in the early hours of the drive, but eventually it became clear that Lee wanted answers Will wasn't willing to give, and a stilted silence had descended. The whole situation was almost breathtaking. He'd known Lee Shore for something like 3 days, and now he was relying on her completely. Everyone in the world knew the Oracle's face, which meant he couldn't pump his own gas, couldn't eat in public, couldn't do anything at all without risking... what? The sound of Miko's head knocking against the concrete. Lee was a risk, but he needed to get west, soon, because things were accelerating, and she could get him there. As long as the illusion of the Oracle held up, with all the leverage it brought him, all the things she thought he knew, they should be fine. That was partly why he had kept the radio off, and why he'd kept conversation to a minimum. If Lee learned too much about Will Dando, the man sitting next to her might stop being the all-powerful Oracle and become just a kid on his bike, rushing down a hill, wondering how he was going to die. All that, and underneath and above and around it all, sick worry for Hamza and Miko. He didn't know their condition and couldn't call. Didn't even know where they were. For all he knew, they were back at Quantico, being questioned by that asshole Loyston. Will eyed the radio, that saucy temptress, holding out its promise of world news that wasn't a day out of date. "Just for a few minutes," he said out loud, earning him a raised eyebrow from Lee. He pressed the power button. "Don't know the Oracle," Hamza said, his voice tainted with a slight overlay of static. "But if I did, I'd tell him to just keep doing what he's doing. My wife and I were hurt in the attack by Hosiah Branson's people, but that's not his fault. He's saved a lot of lives, helped a lot of people. I don't want what happened to us to stop him from what he's doing. I think he's a hero."
"Holy shit," Lee said. "Is that Hamza?"
"Yes," Will said, listening, understanding the gift that Hamza was giving him. A second voice, a woman, assured and confident. "You claim not to know the Oracle, but as we know, he's been revealed to be a man named Will Dando, whom you definitely do know. You went to high school with him, and we've spoken to people who say you two are extremely close friends. And yet,
he hasn't been revealed as the Oracle. Reverend Hosiah Branson just claimed he's the Oracle. I didn't hear any proof. But then again, I didn't have much time to listen before my pregnant wife and I were attacked by an angry mob Branson sent our way."
"That's how you see it?" the interviewer asked.
"Not just me," Hamza said. "I spent the morning speaking with extremely skilled and expensive attorneys, and they all agree. Branson spent months convincing his millions of followers that the Oracle's the devil. Then he claimed Will is the Oracle, and released his name and address on live TV. Branson knew exactly what would happen. That's attempted murder. He is a criminal, and I intend to do everything I can to make sure he pays for the injuries to me, my wife, and our unborn child."
"And Will Dando?" the interviewer asked. "No one has seen him since the attacks outside his apartment."
"I have no idea," Hamza said. "But if I were him, I would be far away, under the radar, getting ready to sue the shit out of Hosiah Branson."
"There we have it," the interviewer said. "Strong words from Hamza Sheikh, victim of an attack by a mob seeking the Oracle. After the break, we'll have our legal experts on to discuss the merits of the sort of claims Mr. Sheikh described."
A commercial began, and Will reached forward to turn off the radio. "He was setting me free," he said, looking at Lee.
"Wait," she said. "Did you know he was going to be on the radio?"
"No," he said.
"Then how did you—"
"Because I'm the Oracle," Will answered, lying and telling the truth at the same time. Lee took her eyes off the road for a minute, evaluating him.
"You said he set you free," she said. "Set you free to do what? What does that mean?"
"Right now, it means driving," Will said.
"Seriously?" she said, her voice tense. "You are aware that all this is a little terrifying?"
"I know," Will said. "I'm sorry. I'll explain more when I can. Right now, it's probably safer if we just keep going."
"Yeah, well, I'm sorry to tell you this, but this is over. We have to stop."
Will whipped his head to the left to stare at Lee.
"What? Why?"
She turned and stared back at him for a moment. Then her mouth turned upward into a smile.
"Because we're almost out of gas," she said.
"Jesus," Will said, exhaling.
Lee laughed. "I'm sorry, man. I just wanted to fuck with you a little bit. Send a little of that terror back your way."
"Yeah," Will said. "I probably deserved it."
"Wig time," she answered.
Will looked up to see that they were pulling off the expressway. He popped open the glove compartment, revealing a blonde wig, a baseball cap, and a pair of sunglasses. Replacements for the disguise he'd lost back at the Waldorf when the coach had found them. Lee tisked in disapproval as they pulled into the gas station.
"Over $8 a gallon," she said.
"Yeah," Will answered, adjusting the baseball cap over the wig. Hard to believe. But it wasn't. The site had been pushing up gas prices for months, all part of its devotion to making the entire world a poisoned, awful mess. Will reached for his wallet and pulled out 320s, handing them to Lee, not without a twinge. They had at least a 4-day drive ahead of them. ATMs weren't an option. They were just as trackable as cell phones, and his accounts were all linked to his name, or Oracle-related businesses, all of which he had to assume were blown by now. They'd started the drive with about $1,000, but between food and gas and cheap hotels and the daily newspaper budget, it would vanish quickly. Will heard Lee pop open the gas tank cover and start to fill the tank. He reached for the notebook again, flipping through it, trying to make sense of all the lists and diagrams, and seeing nothing more than a tangled web of patternless colors. Out of the corner of his eye, something. He looked and saw a man, older, dark-skinned, across the gas station's parking lot, standing next to a beat-up green Celica, and staring right at him with a puzzled, intent look on his face. The man pulled his phone out of his pocket, fiddled with it, stared at the screen, then looked back up, his expression sharpening. There was no question as to what his phone was displaying. A photo of Will Dando on the bandstand, with his bass, smiling a little. "Oh, shit," Will said. He opened the passenger side door and leaned out, catching Lee's attention. "We need to leave right now," he said. "I've only got 20 bucks in," she answered. "Leave it," he said. "I think someone recognized me." Lee's eyes narrowed. She pulled the nozzle out of the tank, slammed the cover closed, and slipped behind the wheel. "Who was it?" "Guy in a green Celica. Go slow. Don't make him sure he saw what he saw. Just get back on the highway."
"All right. Damn it."
The car coasted up the ramp back to I-80, gaining speed as it merged into traffic.
"Is he there?"
Lee asked, accelerating.
"Did he follow us?"
"I don't see him," Will answered, trying to glance behind them without seeming obvious about it. "Maybe we..." Shit. The Celica changed lanes about 6 cars back, emerging from behind a semi like a striking snake. It was going fast, speeding, obviously trying to catch up to them.
"Go," Will said.
"Where?" Lee said, her voice admirably even-toned, under the circumstances.
"Next exit. We won't be able to shake them on the highway. It's a straight line. Maybe if we can get ahead of them, though, we can turn off somewhere. Hide.
Like in the movies," Lee said. The suggestion cleared that this was not, in fact, a movie.
"Yeah," Will answered, looking back through the rear window, not trying to hide it anymore, feeling the push of acceleration as Lee hit the gas.
The next exit, another small town. Lee hit the ramp too fast, skidded a little, and corrected. The Celica had been caught in a little snarl of traffic, and they'd gotten some distance, but not enough. Not miles. Lee turned off the bottom of the ramp, the tires squealing. Will wondered how the hell she'd ever learned to drive like this, then decided to stop wondering. Because what if she hadn't ever learned to drive like this? The notebook slid off the dashboard into Will's lap, flopping open. He glanced down, steadying it with his hand, and saw that it had opened to the list of Oracle predictions. One in particular caught his eye, and his eyes flicked to the dashboard clock. 11:03 a.m., then back to the notebook. Will ripped his eyes up to the road, examining the tiny, depressed, depressing town they were zooming through. He knew they were inviting the attention of whatever police department Starling, Ohio had to offer, and didn't care.
"Look for a laundromat," he said.
"What?" Lee said, not understanding.
"What will that do for us?"
Will looked back behind them and saw the Celica rocket off the ramp. He didn't know what their pursuer wanted. Didn't know if there was a reward out for him, or if it was about bragging rights, or if he wanted him dead. Most likely he had a question, and Will didn't have any answers left.
"There,"
he heard Lee say.
Up on the right. Now what?
Turn in, Will said, taking a deep breath. Lee pulled into the parking lot, screeching to a stop next to a white panel van with a logo on it. Will didn't take time to read it. He scrambled out of the car and ran to the laundromat's front door, aware of the Celica pulling into the lot behind him. He yanked open the door and dashed inside, Lee a few steps behind him. The laundromat was a laundromat. Washers and dryers and folding tables. Vending machines for soap and fabric softener and snacks. A few beat-up arcade cabinets, treasures in any Williamsburg bar, here dusty and ignored. Patrons, not many, but more than a few, most wearing matching t-shirts, all staring at Will and Lee, eyes wide. Will reached up, grasping his wig, hat, and sunglasses. Lee looked at him, dismayed.
What the fuck are you doing?
Will removed his paltry, stupid disguise. The reaction was instant. Everyone, every single person in the place knew who he was. The Oracle had come to Starling.
You,
said the man closest to him, a silver-haired slim fellow wearing one of the matching t-shirts.
You're him.
I am, Will said. The door swung open behind him, and the man from the gas station stepped inside. Will spun to look.
I knew it, he said, pointing. The goddamned Oracle.
He took a step forward, his expression intent, manic, one hand in his pocket, pulling an object out. Probably his phone to snap a picture. Maybe something else, a knife or a gun. Will stepped backward, grasping Lee by the arm and pulling her with him.
Stop, Will said. Stop now.
But the man didn't stop. A smile appeared on his face.
No, he said. You know what this means?
And then the other man was there. The older man in the t-shirt, stepping between the Oracle and his attacker, supplicant, fan. He held up a hand.
You heard the Oracle, he said. Please stay back.
Other customers stepped up, surrounding the man from the gas station, all wearing the same t-shirt. Will finally read it. Cincinnati Men's Chorus, in elegant navy letters against white.
Fuck's this, the Celica man said, his face uncertain, even a bit afraid.
Nothing,
the first man said. Apparently the leader of the Cincinnati Men's Chorus.
Unless you make it something.
He turned to Will.
What do you need? How can we help you?
Will considered.
I just want to go. I need to get some distance on this guy. That's all.
The older man nodded and turned back to Celica Man.
All right. You're going to stay here with us while the Oracle leaves. And you're going to let him go wherever he wants. And you aren't going to follow him. Right?
Celica Man glanced at the ring of silent men surrounding him. The Oracle's defenders, taking their measure. He slipped his hand from his pocket and held it and its mate up, palms out.
Right.
The chorus leader turned back to Will. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a set of car keys, tossing them through the air. Will caught them and gave the man a questioning look.
This gentleman knows what you're driving, so you'll want to take my car. It's next to the van outside, a rental in my name. Take it wherever you need to go. I'll cover the cost.
Will looked at Lee. She looked completely lost. Like she had no idea what was happening. To be fair, neither did Will, not really.
Thank you, Will said, looking back at the chorus director. We'll leave you the keys for ours on the driver's seat. Sell it, do whatever you want with it. We appreciate the help. More than you know.
He looked at the silent chorus members and the Celica man, and then down at the wig, hat, and sunglasses still clutched in his hand.
Why?
He asked. The director blinked, surprised.
Don't you know? I mean, if you don't know, then why did you come here, right now?
Just tell me, Will said.